Normally we say good morning, but now it's evening. Welcome to the Hoshana version, Hoshana Rabba version of Daf Yomi. So every now and then somebody comes over and makes a connection between the Daf and the day. And today, so I'm going to give Stuart credit. Stuart really deserves full credit over here in terms of making the connection. Well, anyway, I'll do that a little bit later on. Anyway, let's begin. We're here in the 12th parak of the Masechta, and we're starting the 12th parak of the Masechta. It starts on Kuf Alpha and Beis. Today's Daf is Kuf Beis. So let's just do a little bit of an introduction. So a man marries a woman, so he's got obligations. I know that's the Masechta in a nutshell, but he's got obligations towards her, and she also has obligations towards him. Benefits are going in both directions. It happens to be that yesterday's daf, meaning the one I said earlier today. So it happens to be that we discussed that really in phenomenal detail, because what happens when the marriage is less than a 100% sanctioned marriage, and then what happens to those benefits that go in both of those directions. So, right, that was what we tried to wrap our head around earlier today. But meanwhile, here in the Mishnah, so the Mishnah over here is going to operating with a new idea, obviously. In other words, it's a new parak, it's a new Mishnah. So we have a new idea over here, and that's the following. So in other words, this is not the first time this woman's been married. It's not the first time the woman's been married. She's been married before, and she's had kids from a previous marriage. Okay, and such is life, and now you're marrying her. So you're marrying her, so now you're getting a new wife, and you're also getting new kids, okay, that come together with the marriage. Now, you obviously have an obligation to support her, but they're not your kids. So Minotaur, you have no obligation to support them, but, in other words, she'd love to hear from you how not only you're going to support her, but you're going to support the kids as well. So what do you do? So you contract. And that's what we're going to be discussing here in the beginning of the first mission of the 12th parak of Ksuvos. And that is that your contractual obligation in which you're now going to support your stepkids. Okay. Specifically your stepdaughters. In other words, she comes in with a stepdaughter and you contract to do so. And so we're going to be talking about the minutiae and the fine details regarding this now contractual obligation in which you've taken upon yourself to go ahead and support your stepdaughter for, let's say, the next 5 years. I say that as an example. It obviously could be however long you contracted for, but it happens to be the Mishnah over here is talking about a 5-year term. Okay, so anyway, so you contract to support her 5 years. So again, because you're not obligated to support her, and because you did this on your own, so now what? That means that now you are obligated to her, meaning it's like a chov, it's like an obligation. Okay, and if you wrote it down, so now we're talking about a chov that is kasuv b'shtar. So a written obligation. So what do we know about written obligations? So in other words, not only do you owe it, but because it's written down in a document, at least we think so right now. In other words, that's how we're going to be opening up this parak. So therefore, your properties are going to be liened and mortgaged against that obligation. She will now have an ability and a right to come and collect from those properties, even though those properties are sold off. She has a lien on that property.
It's not a Tanakh Kesuva, a Tosis Kesuva.
Not your stepdaughter. Your daughter, you have an obligation to support. That's tonight, Ksuva.
So what is this?
This is now your new separate contractual obligation that you've taken upon yourself.
Why does Dorsey go about it?
So I assume it'd be the same thing, meaning that there really would be no difference between daughter and son. It just happens to be that what we're going to be doing is contrasting your biological daughters and your stepdaughter. So
the sons are from the mother. The wife's sons have the Kesuva v'niduchlin.
Okay, but that's true, but that's late. That's much, much later down the road. Meaning that's after the mother dies and after the father dies, and that's talking about the collection of estate. That's later on. We're talking about right now. In other words, right, Mizonos. Mizonos right now. Okay, so with that stated, so we begin with the Mishnah. No, says Isha. The Ksuva is only going to take care of the woman you marry. The Ksuva is not taking care of the stepdaughter.
She has a husband still. She's divorced. He's alive. He's
not dead. Right? Okay, perfect. Okay, wait, so hold that thought. So I know says Isha. So here we are now, starting with the new Mishnah. No, says Isha. Paskimok deshiasan esbita chameshanim. So you're marrying a woman again. She's either widowed or divorced. Doesn't matter. And she comes in now with her own daughter. And so what you do is paska. So paska literally means an agreement. You agree that what you're going to do is you're going to support her for 5 years. Chayv lazona chameshanim, and because you agreed to do so, so therefore obviously you got to keep your agreement. So the Now, let's say this marriage didn't work out. Again, life happens. It happens. The marriage didn't work out. And now what happens is now she's married. Now, for her, this would be her third marriage. Okay, good. And I know we discussed earlier back in Yevamos in terms of marrying a woman who's been married now two times. In this case, this can now represent her third marriage. Okay, but anyway, let's just focus on the case at hand. So now she's getting married now for a third time, but now in this new marriage, so once again, she goes into this marriage and she says, look, here's my story, right? She's used to telling the story. And that is, it's not just me, but it's also my daughter. My daughter needs support. Are you ready to go ahead and support my daughter? He says, yeah, sure, 5-year term of supporting your daughter. So lo yomar rishon lechetavo etzli azona. So now her first husband, now I know it's going to get confusing because it's not her first husband, but in the context of this story, in other words, we're going to call it husband number one, husband number two. Again, I know she was married previously, but just vis-a-vis contracts and obligations. So we're going to call him husband number one, husband number two. So vis-a-vis husband number one. So now you can understand, totally understandable how he's annoyed. Because in other words, I know I contracted to support my stepdaughter, but now the marriage didn't work out. We're no longer married. And yes, I got to keep to my contractual agreement. Because my contractual agreement to support the stepdaughter is outside the bounds of our marriage. Meaning I just simply stipulated I'm supporting that girl for 5 years. It is not ksuva bound. It's not so I know I have to support her. But meanwhile, can we all see what just happened? She just married another man. That other man also contracted to support her. How many supports does she need? What, right? One support, two support? She only needs one support. I'll tell you what. In other words, if she's hungry for food, she'll come to me. She'll join me in my house and she'll come to me and she'll eat with me. Otherwise, I'm not gonna send her support. So what the Mishnah is saying is, you can't do that. Meaning because husband number one contracted to support her and made no stipulations regarding that contractual obligation, so therefore the contractual obligation is binding regardless of what happens with him and her mother. Now, so what you're going to do is that he's going to have to send the support to now where she currently is. Now, what the two men cannot do is they can't get together and say, hey, look, in other words, she only needs to eat once, meaning, I don't mean once a day, but you understand what I mean. In other words, the obligation is to support her. So, we'll give her 1 day's worth of meal. How about this? How about as a joint venture, we'll give her one day's worth of meal? In other words, we'll pool our monies together and we'll give her 1 day's worth of meal. So can we do that? So to that, the Mishnah says, no, you can't. They can't say that. One of them is going to give them actual food and the other one's going to give them domain mazonos. It's going to give them the value of food. Meaning, again, your contractual obligation is just simply to support for 5 years.
So what's the second one? How does he get it? I mean, what's his... The first one's giving, but the second one also made a contract.
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah, so she'll get food and money.
The
money's because he agreed to these terms.
No, you mean he gets money even though she has food?
She's going to get money even though she has food. In other words, now she's got two streams of revenue. She's got from the first husband, she's got the second husband. The obligation was support. Good, I know it was support. But in other words, support is either going to be food or it's going to be its financial equivalency. She'll get both. That's exactly the point. So Nisus Abal Nosin La Mizonos Vehinosin La Deme Mizonos. Now, yeah, let's go even for one step further. Okay, how about a third stream of revenue? Why not? In other words, and now what happens is that this girl who's already got two streams of revenue, God bless her. So she's already got two streams of revenue and now she gets married. Now that she's married, so now her husband is obligated to support her. So now she's still within the window 5 years from her former stepfather. And now she's within the 5 years of her current stepfather. And on top of that, now she's also married. More power to her. So now she's going to get support from her current husband. She's going to get her support from her first stepfather, her former stepfather. And she's also going to get support from her current stepfather as well. Baruch Hashem. Vein oslan de mezonos. Okay, Mesu. Now, let's say her stepfather died, or let's say they both died. So, b'nosem nizonos menechas menecharim, v'hi nizonos menechas meshubadim. Now, I'm sorry, let me just read on. Mimneshi kebalas chov. And so now, let's say that her stepfathers die. Both of them die. So now what? So we know as follows. Their biological daughters need to be supported, and that's Sinai Ksuva. When you marry a woman, stipulated in that Ksuva that you wrote is that I'm supporting you and I'm supporting our daughters as well. Meaning our daughters are also going to get supported from me until they get married. So the and that's written into the ksuva. And even if it's not written into the ksuva, it's built in. It's hardwired into the ksuva. This is what's called Tanai ksuva. Now, here's an interesting contrast. It's so interesting. Meaning that vis-a-vis his daughters, meaning even though their biological fathers have died and they're obligated now, meaning they, the estate, is obligated now to go ahead and support the daughters. Oddly enough, ironically enough, the biological daughters are going to get supported, but only from Nechasim and Nechorim, only from funds in the estate that currently were within the possession of the estate. But they do not have a lien on those obligations. And therefore, any of those properties are sold off. So the daughters can't collect from properties that are sold off. They can only collect from properties that are on hand. On the other hand, contrast that now to the stepdaughter, meaning because they have a contractual obligation and because it remains separate from the ksuva, so what the stepdaughters can do now, what the stepdaughter can do is that they can collect, and it's a chov, and presumably it's a written chov, and they can collect from nechasim meshubadim. And it's an oddity, but in other words, but it's just the dynamics of how contracts work. It's an oddity, but in other words, what the stepdaughter's ability to collect is going to exceed that of what the daughters are able to collect. The daughters are only able to collect from Nechasim and Necharin, and the stepdaughters now can collect from even Nechasim and Shubadim. Okay, now, all this is avoidable, and that's the last line of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, now, Hapichim, now let's say, how you Hayukosim, now let's say you happen to be that you are getting into this marriage with this woman and your new stepdaughter, and you'd like to avoid this. In other words, obviously, it's a frustration. So what you do is you simply write into the contract, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to support your daughters. And yes, I'll support them for 5 years, but on the simple condition that you're still with me. In other words, as long as you're with me, I'm going to support your daughter. But once our marriage is no longer, is terminated either through death or through divorce, so then I'm not supporting your daughter anymore. And now, obviously what you've done now is that you've gave her the assurances that you're going to support her daughter, but what you're not going to do now is you're not going to continuously support them even after the marriage is terminated by simply writing in a simple condition into this contractual obligation. I'd count that takes us to the end of the mission. Obviously we begin with the Gemara Itmar. Now, this is going to be one of those classic situations in which the Gemara is going to go off course. We're going to go off road right now. We're going to pick on a topic that is not at all seemingly related to our Mishnah. And then eventually, you know what we're going to do? We're going to come back to our Mishnah. Because our Mishnah may, in fact, shed some light on the following issue. So first of all, let's introduce the issue. Itmar Amalecha Verchaiv Anil Chamana. So let's say one person says to the other, Reuven says to Shimon, I owe you money. And I owe you money. I owe you 100. Now, we need more context over here. What they said in front of witnesses, this was written, meaning we need more context. So what I'm going to ask everyone to do is just wait a moment, because everything will get fleshed out. We're going to see exactly a lot better what is happening over here. So I owe you a mana. Rav Yochanan Amar Chayev, and Reish Lakish Amar Pater. So we have a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether or not you're obligated or not obligated. Hechi dami. And the Gemara says, obviously, we need much more context over here. What's happening? So first of all, he's making this admission in front of other people. So, and he says to the witnesses, Atemedai. In other words, I want you to watch the following as I make an admission. So in other words, he is now in a group. You don't need a group. You just simply need two kosher witnesses. And in front of the two witnesses, he says, gentlemen, right, pay attention. I'm about to admit formally, legally, that I owe this person money. Okay, so the Gemara says, if that's in fact what's happening, so then you have to ask the question. My Tamad Reish Lakish de Kapater. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. If you have the Edom and you said you're going to be serving as witnesses as I now make a formal legal admission, so then of course you're obligated. And if you are not turning to the witnesses, but you just simply say, I owe you money, so then you're not going to be obligated, and everyone agrees to that. And as Tosfos points out over here, why not? Why won't you be obligated? Because if I do not say this with seriousness, and I turn to witnesses and I say, hey, gentlemen, I need you to serve as witnesses for me, so then what you can easily say afterwards is, Meshata ani bach. I was just joking. In other words, right, if you're not giving this a formal context, so then you could just simply always say afterwards, you know, people talk, people banter. Right, I owe you money. Good, I said it. Okay, I even said it in front of other people, but I wasn't serious. Okay, so fine. So the Gemara is still as at a loss at understanding where's the room for machlokas. If you're miyachid edim, you for sure are obligated. If you are not miyachid edim, so then you're for sure not obligated. So la'olam de lo kamer lo matem edai v'hachem b'maiskinah. So the Gemara says, okay, so here's what's happening over here. You didn't designate the witnesses, and d'amar le'chayv anelchamana bishtar. Now, what happened is the following, and that is that I owe you a money. I owe you a mana. It's 100. And bishtar. And what you do now is that you write a note. And literally, I owe you. In other words, you just simply write down a note saying, I owe you 100. And what you did not do is you didn't sign your name on the bottom of the shtar, and you handed it over. And now, so what you did is, this is not a contract. It's not a contract. Because what is a contract? A contract is very simple and has very, very clear parameters. A contract is where you write on a note, right, that Reuven owes Shimon this much money. And right, you could tell you write you could write the date. You should write the date in terms of when the origination of the loan is. And then on the bottom, what you do is you have two witnesses signing on the document. Okay, so in other words, in order to create an obligation, a documented obligation in halacha, shtei edim, you need two witnesses signing on the document. So over here, you don't have that. The only thing you have is just simply the lova is writing a note to the mava saying I owe you money, and no witnesses are signing it, not even the Lova himself signed on the document. And now what? So the Gemara explains. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Chaya Valima Milsa Dishtar Kamanda Amar Lema Temedai. So now, even though it's not a document, I mean that in the legal sense, but what Rabbi Yochanan will tell you that it does is, it gives the moment significance. Meaning by me filling out a piece of paper, saying that I owe you money, and now in this note, it's not just me verbalizing, I owe you money. It's me now also writing it down on paper. So does it formalize the moment? Does it make the moment more serious? Is it now comparable to me turning to the witnesses and saying, Atem Edai? Rav Yochanan believes it does. And Reish Lakish Amar Pater Lo Alima Milsa Deshtara. And what Reish Lakish will tell you is that no. In other words, the note does not have the status of a document. It's not a shtar. And you didn't turn to witnesses, and you didn't appoint witnesses, you didn't designate witnesses. And what's doing? So instead of saying it, so now you wrote it. Okay, yeshar koach, that's great. But it didn't change anything. Meaning you're no more bound, no more obligated than you were previously. Okay, to none. Okay, so what we now have introduced ourselves to is the machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, in which an admission is made in front of witnesses that you owe money. And the only thing that we're legislating is the following. Meaning, let's go over the extremes. If I turned to witnesses and said, I'm going to formally declare and make myself obligated to this person. It's a verbal declaration. But I need you as witnesses because I want you to serve as witnesses to say that I owe the money, that I said it. So fine. So then obviously that now creates an obligation. Now, by the way, it's not a contracted obligation. It's not a milva bishtar. It's a milva alpeh. But still, in other words, but because I asked them to be witnesses, so great. So now I'm obligated. On the other hand, that's one extreme. The other extreme is, I didn't say anything to the people around. In other words, we're just talking, we're bantering. And even though I say, I owe you money, but if I didn't turn to the witnesses and ask them to serve as witnesses, so then that has no significance whatsoever. That also we agree to. The area in between where we're going to have disagreement between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish is that I say it and I write it. So whatever. Yeah, let's say it like that. I say it and I write it. But again, it's not a shtar, it's not a document, I'm not having two witnesses sign on it. I myself am not even signing on it. By the way, the way I'm presenting the Gemara is like Rashi. Okay, there are other ways to say over the Gemara, but right now I'm just saying it over Kipshuto like Rashi. And so in other words, I write the note. So is that going to add seriousness to the moment? Yes or no? Rav Yochanan says yes, Reish Lakish says no. And so let's take a look now back at our Mishnah. So Tanan, so what did we learn in the Mishnah? No says Aisha, Paski Mola Zonis Bita, Khameshanim Khaiva Zona Khameshanim Mai Lav Ki Ai Gavna. So now, in our Mishnah, so what was there? There was agreement made between him and his new wife that he's going to support the stepdaughter. Now, agreement, right? The Mishnah's language is Paska Imo Lazon is Bita. Okay, so there was an agreement that was made. What kind of agreement are we talking about? The Gemara assumes, my love, ki agavna. Maybe it's like what we're discussing right now. So meaning to say that it was a verbal agreement. It was done, let's say in front of witnesses. It was a verbal agreement and just simply a little hand note, you know, passed from him to her saying that I owe you. The Gemara says, la b'shtar p'sikta. So the Gemara says, no. That's not, we're not talking about, this, you know, basically like some sort of oral agreement. In other words, we're talking about shtari psikta. Now, that begs the question, what is shtari psikta? Look at the top Rashi on Kuf Beis Amud Aleph. I'm reading the top Rashi. HaChasam v'kala poskin tanaim shebeinem b'ibnei edim v'aedim chosim edus gemura. So over here, what we're looking at is a bona fide contract. In other words, what's happening over here is at the wedding. So we have witnesses. And not only that, the witnesses are signing on the document. Now, v'im tamarein came my lamemra. So obviously now Rashi is going to be asking the obvious question, which is, if that's what our Mishnah is describing, so then new, so what's the Chiddush? Meaning, the assumption of the Gemara is that our Mishnah is talking about some sort of like oral agreement that they have one another. Ah, now the Mishnah is giving us a Chiddush. But if we're talking about a contractual obligation that was made at the wedding, so then what's the Chiddush of the Mishnah? So Rashi writes, so v'im tamarim ke ma'la memra, it's rech kagon deleke kinyin el dvarim, v'ashmini kedrav gidol delo bai kinyin. Ah. So in other words, there was a contract, but there was no kinyan. Okay, so, as we all know, in other words, in order to ratify something in halacha, a transaction, I say something, I mean a transaction, to ratify a transaction in halacha, you need a kinyan. Okay, so, as we open up to the beginning of Kedushin, which will take some time in here in the Daf Yomi, it's the last Masechta here in Seder Nashim, but when we get to the beginning of Kedushin, so that's going to be all we're going to talk about in that beginning perek of Kedushin, monster perek. Right, 40 prakim. So 40 prakim. 40 pages. So the so over there we're going to be talking about how do you make kinyanim? So when it comes to a woman, kesef sharbia, when it comes to items, so meshicha, mesira, etc., etc. In other words, there are certain ways in which you you ratify and it's a formal, symbolic way of showing that you have agreed to the transaction. Okay, by land, kesef, shtar, chazaka. Okay, we'll see all this in Kedushin. Over here, what we're learning together is as follows. What's the Chiddush in the Mishnah? Chiddush in the Mishnah is as follows. Contract was written up, and two witnesses signed on the contract, but we didn't make a kinyan. Now, what kinyan are we expecting to make at a wedding? That's easy, actually. Kinyan Sudar. In other words, the kinyan Sudar, which is kind of like the universal kinyan, right? In other words, right, take an item of any value, and right, you pick it up and hand it over from one to the other. And the and good. In other words, and that formalizes now the binding agreement. So now what we're learning together is the following, and that is that at the wedding, with a shtar and without a kinyan, that creates a kinyan gemar. Right? That's it. That's the chiddush of our Mishnah. That's the way Rashi understands our Gemara. Uch Rav Gidol, and we continue now in the Gemara. We're on the top of Kuf Beis Amud Aleph, and the Gemara says, and this goes like Rav Gidol, Damar Rav Gidol Amarav. Damer of Gidol Amarav, Kama Atanosin Levincha Kach Vekach, Kama Atanosin Levitcha Kach Vekach, Amdu Vikidushu. So Kanu. So now, with the Kedushin comes the Kinyan. Hein Hein Adverma, Nikdim Ba'amira. And we didn't do a formal Kinyan, doesn't matter, even despite the fact that you didn't do a formal Kinyan. In other words, there's enough, let's call it Gemiras Das. Right? In other words, what is a Kinyan? It really just shows us that we're in agreement. In other words, by me handing something over to you, and it shows that we are now in perfect alignment with one another. We have agreement of mind. At a wedding, there's a total understanding that contextually, right, we're getting married, right? You knew that? Yeah, I think so. there's enough hints right now surrounding us that we know we're getting married. Good. So let's negotiate now. In other words, what are you putting into the marriage? What are you putting into the marriage? Oh, you know, I have a daughter. Yes, I know you have a daughter. Okay, you're going to support her. Yes, I'm going to support her. How long are you going to support her for? And all this gets written up in contractual agreements. By the way, the support that he's going to write for the daughter probably is going to be written in a separate contract. Whatever. Part of the ksuba. Maybe it's part of the ksuba. Okay, regardless. Okay, the point is that the all you need to do at the wedding is write it up in a shtar. Again, you'll have witnesses signing on the shtar so that it will be a contractual agreement, so that it will be now a milva b'shtar. It'll be a chov shebishtar. But in other words, but what you don't have to do is a kinyan, because a kinyan is necessary but when we're not sure that we're on the same page. Over here, clearly they're on the same page with one another. So no kinyan is required. Okay, Toshma. So once again, where are we right now? So we're going back to the Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish. So what happens is that there was an admission. Good. There was an admission, and within the admission, so I owe you money, but again, what you didn't do is you weren't miyachid edim, but what you did is you wrote a note. And the question now becomes, are you obligated with the writing of the note? So kasav l'kohen tashma kasav l'kohen shani chayv l'cha chamesh laim chayv l'ten l'cha chamesh laim u'benoin apadui. So the Gemara says like this: what if you do the following? After having your firstborn son, so now you owe 5 salim to a kohen. Good. So you call your local kohen and you say to him, look, I owe you $5. Good. So what's the halacha? Now, you could be understood to simply mean that, in other words, I owe you $5. I say $5, by the way. It's 5 salim. But regardless, the point's still going to be the same. So I owe you 5 salim. Now, the easiest way to understand it is, I have a newborn son. The Torah obligates me to give a kohen 5 salim, and I want you to be my kohen. And when I say I owe you 5 salim, it's because you're going to be my designated kohen. That's one way it could be understood. Alternatively, what you could mean is that, hey, I want to give you 5 salim. I know contextually I just had a son and I owe a kohen, but in other words, but I wasn't clear about that. All I did is I just simply called you up and I said, I owe you 5 salim. He didn't write. No, he didn't write it. He just made a declaration. So, chayv l'ten lo chamesh salim uvanau ein apadui. So, the Gemara quotes in this brisa, and by the way, it's a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah Becharis. So the Gemara quotes from this Mishnah that, look, you're going to give the kohen 5 salim and your son is not yet redeemed. So over here, it seems like what we're describing over here is some sort of verbal commitment. And I don't know, let's say you wrote a note also. So, you know, even substantiating the verbal commitment. And yet what we find over here is it doesn't work. So the Gemara says, Shani Hasan, de Meshuba Le Medaraisa. So the Gemara says, oh, come on, that's different. That's different than what we're discussing right now because you have a chiyuv min haTorah. The Torah tells you that you're obligated. You have a shiba midaraisa. So the Gemara says, I am I kasav. So the Gemara says, okay, so if you have a shiba daraisa, so what are you writing right now? I owe you 5? Of course you owe 5. In other words, the Torah says you owe 5. So kedei levar lo kohen. So the Gemara says, okay, in other words, I'll tell you what you did. You wrote because you wanted that particular coin. You have a particular fond relationship with that coin, and you wanted that coin. So the reason why you wrote it down is because you just wanted to be Mavara. So now the question which everyone here hopefully is thinking is, okay, so it's a Shibud Min HaTorah, and I wrote it so I could designate which coin it is. So new, it should work. So of course, so what's the Mishnah telling us? You're going to give him 5 slime and it doesn't work. Well, what do you mean? Of course it should work. That's the Gemara's next question. So yachi beno amai in a padoi. So kidu ulad amr ulad var Torah padoi lichishiyite. So the Gemara says, okay, so the way to understand the Mishnah is only through the lens of Ula. Ula teaches us the following. Of course, when you gave him the money, you were padoi to your son. However, what the Chachamim did is they stepped in and they made a gzera. And why? In my time, amru beno in a padoi, gzera shema yamru padoi mishtaros. Because what happened over here is as follows. Let's take a look at it from the casual observer. Watch it. Watch from the perspective of the casual observer as he sees you now hand a note over to the Kohen. Mazel tov. Okay. Casual observer is going to go home and he says, look, I saw something amazing today. And that is, how was he poed to his son? I don't know. He gave the Kohen a piece of paper. And he was poed to his son. Ah, you can be poed to Bishtar. So what Ula was worried about is that if people engage in this kind of behavior, so people are going to walk away with erroneous conclusions in terms of how pidgin works. Pidgin, when it comes to the Kohen, does not operate with a shtar. In other words, you can marry a woman with a shtar. Shtar can do a lot. But shtar cannot be serving as a vehicle for pidgin. And so Ula was concerned that if people see this, they'll say that you are poda with a shtar. And therefore, what the Chachamim did is they blocked. Which, by the way, deserving its own discussion, I'll just raise awareness, meaning it's rather amazing. Meaning, as far as the Torah is concerned, the money that you gave was a pidyon. And because of a gzeira derabanan, the Chachamim can block that.
Is it based
on Hefkabay? Yeah. Yeah, I assume.
For the case of the Gemara, he didn't give the money, he gave the
star, right? No, but the Gemara's original discussion is that when I make a verbal declaration, and I even write a note, you know, and hand over the note, so according to Rav Yochanan, that's sufficient in order to create that obligation. And Reish Lakish says it accomplishes nothing. And over here, what about what we're discussing over here regarding the Kohen? The Gemara says it's fundamentally different. There's a Shibud Midaraisa, and therefore it's fundamentally different. Ama Rava Kitanai. Okay, so what Rava now is going to propose is the following, and that is, this Machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish is really Machlokas Tanayim. Let's go over the following. Okay. Now, a little bit of contract law, right, shall we? Okay, I'm not teaching right now contract law in terms of America. I'm not qualified to do so by any stretch of the imagination, but I know a little bit of a contract law as far as the Torah is concerned. I mean, as far as the Torah is concerned, Torah never talks about contracts. But in other words, but as far as the halacha is concerned, okay, we've seen enough Gemara. So it's a really simple premise, and that is the following. The way a contract works is that you have a piece of paper. On the piece of paper, what you now do is write whatever you want to write as far as obligations are concerned, whatever the contract is affecting, and then below that, you have two signatures signing below it. Okay? Gemara is elsewhere, have lengthy discussions in terms of what if the witnesses are signing side by side. But anyway, you have one witness signing on top of another witness, and that's it. As far as the contract is concerned, all contractual obligations now have come to an end. Let's say there's margin. Let's say there's room underneath the signatures, as far as halacha is concerned, totally insignificant. You write a little addendum right below the signatures. It's lovely. It has no bearing whatsoever. Halacha does not regard anything that's below the signatures. Okay? So the way that a contract works is that whatever you're obligated to is going to always finish off with the signatures directly below. And by the way, the Gemara also has a lengthy discussion elsewhere in terms of making sure the signatures are signing directly below the body of the shtar, because obviously what you don't want to do is you don't want any room for people to just fill in things afterwards. Okay, anyway, good. So now with that stated, so now we go to our Gemara and the following. I'm a Rav Kitanai, Arav Yosei Acher Chitum Shtaros. So let's say you have the following, and that is that now post-signatures, below the signatures, what you have is you have a guarantor. And the guarantor is now signing directly below the signatures under those circumstances. So, govim nechasim nechorim. So, what you can do is the following, and that is that you can go to the arev, and the lender can collect from properties that are on his possession that he currently is holding, current holdings. So, govim nechasim nechorim. So, ma'isa balef ne Rabbi Shmuel ba'amar govim nechasim nechorim. And such a case came in front of Rabbi Shmuel. And and he said, "Govim nechasim necharim." So Amalehu Benanas. So Benanas was there, and he said to Rabbi Yishmael, "No, ain't a govim lo nechasim necharim, v'lo nechasim mishubadim." So Amalo Lama. So Rabbi Yishmael says to Benanas, "Well, why? Why would you say that?" Amalo Hareishayachonik is chaver b'shokem matzah chaver v'amalo hanachlo v'ani etin lechapater shalo al emunaso hilvau. Consider the following. Right? You're walking through the market, you're walking through the shuk, and you see somebody choking your friend. Okay, so you go over and say, "Excuse me, is there a good reason why you're choking my friend?" He says, "Yeah." He says, "The bum hasn't paid me. In other words, I lent him money. It's been some time now. He's defaulted, and I'm asking for money, and he's refusing to pay me. And so, okay, so I have a good reason for choking him. Okay. Maybe the dispute can be resolved verbally, but okay, I'm not in the business of trying to create peace right now. So fine. So in other words, so you say to the choker, who is a creditor, and you say, "Do me a favor. If you could just relax your grip on his neck for just a moment, what's the issue right now? He's not paying you? Okay, I'm here." In other words, I'm going to be serving as a guarantor. Okay. So, and at least for the moment, so the grip has been relaxed and your friend now can breathe. Well, good. You did a wonderful thing. Are you now obligated to serve as guarantor? And Benanas says to Rabbi Shmuel, "Of course not." In other words, all you were doing right now was trying to get your friend to be able to breathe a little bit. Literally, just to get him to breathe a little bit. So in other words, you said it to try to calm everyone down, right? In other words, tempers obviously are really high right now. Okay, no, calm down. I'm here anyway. Okay, later when, by the way, when the creditor discovers that you're not really, I understand that at a later point in time, if your friend doesn't pay up, so this can escalate. So I understand it's a short-term solution and we all understand that. The point right now, as far as we're concerned, is that you didn't bind yourself to anything. In other words, as a guarantor, do you know when you serve as a guarantor? When you're there at the origination of the loan. And when the money's being exchanged from lender to borrower, and at that point in time, you're co-signing on the document, then you're serving as a guarantor. But at a later point in time, just to diffuse the situation, you're not going to be, you're saying you're a guarantor, but we all understand you're just right now trying to help out your friend. It's understood contextually. So Benana says to Rabbi Yishmael, it's the same thing over here. In other words, once the signatures are signed on the document, that's it. In other words, the book is closed. The loan is due, and you're now coming afterwards. It is analogous to you meeting your friend being choked in the marketplace and saying, "Hey, I'm here to guarantee." Okay, good. So now what happens is the following. Lema Rabbi Yochanan Damar, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yishlakish Damar, Kebenanas. And what we have over here is seemingly alignment. Okay? Second day in a row, by the way. We just had this in yesterday's daf. The second day, now we have alignment. In which what it sounds like is that the Rabbi Yochanan is going like Rabbi Yishmael. And Rabbi Yishlakish is going like Benanas. Meaning basically what we have over here is that, is there any significance to a note? Meaning the Arev writing on the document, but below the signatures, is basically tantamount to a handwritten note. And maybe over here, that's exactly what's at the core of the machlokes between Rabbi Yishmael and versus Benanas. It's the same thing that Rabbi Yochanan is having with Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan says, you write a handwritten note that you owe money, that's significant. Just like Rabbi Yishmael says, you want to write a little note after the signature saying that you're going to serve as guarantor, that's significant. Now, again, how significant? You're not part of the document, but in other words, it's still a handwritten note. He can come after you, meaning the lender can come after you, after your B'nai Chorin. And what Reish Lakish will tell you is that, you know who I agree with? I agree with Benanas. Benanas says, when the Arev writes after the signatures, you know what that means? Nothing. Reish Lakish says, right, because a handwritten note doesn't mean anything. So the Gemara says, libet the Benanas kol amalo pligi. So the Gemara says, look, as far as Benanas' position is concerned, I there's nothing to quibble. Benanas clearly is of the position that a handwritten note has no significance. I'm with you. But keep pligi libet the Rabbi Yishmael. But certainly within Rabbi Yishmael, the following could be argued. And that is Rabbi Yochanan to Rabbi Yishmael. Look, Rabbi Yochanan can see Rabbi Yishmael eye to eye. Right? It's a handwritten note which has significance. And Reish Lakish, what Reish Lakish will tell you is the following. Ad kan lo kamar Yishmael asam ala deshaych le lishibudi da raisa. As far as Rabbi Yishmael is concerned, so it's true. Rabbi Yishmael wasn't saying that you're going to be chai b'shtar. But as it relates to an arev, so an arev does operate at least on a daraisa level. Meaning, what Rabbi Yishmael will tell you is that, look, in the context of an arev, so there is a category of arev that operates on a daraisa level, and the arev shibud, meaning his obligation, had he been there at the origination, would have operated on daraisa level. So over here now, as an attachment to a document, it's not an attachment, but in other words, by him writing a note belowhand, so at least it serves as some basis. It will have some strength to it. But over here, what are you doing? You're writing a note to somebody saying, I owe you money? Meaning that's nothing. In other words, you're not operating as an arev. And even though you're now making an admission, but halachically speaking, it's not an admission. You didn't designate the witnesses. In other words, there was no original note to speak about. Okay. So in other words, we can make a distinction between the Rabbi Yishmael situation of signing below the signatures versus our discussion of just simply a borrower writing a handwritten note to the lender. Guf Amrav Gidal Marav. So, okay, good. So where are we right now? We left the issue unresolved. Meaning that in a case where the borrower writes a note to the lender saying, I owe you money. And again, it wasn't the original document and it's just simply a note saying, I owe you money. And you write the note and you hand it over in front of other people. Is that significant? Rav Yochanan says yes. Reish Lakish says no. And what we just did is spend over an Amud of Gemara trying to see whether or not any of these positions are in fact seen or demonstrated in a Mishnah and a Braisa. Okay. And the matter is left unresolved. But let's go back and let's just go a little bit further for today. Gufa. Okay. Gufa Amar of Gidal Amarav, Kaman Atanosin Levna, Kach Vakach, Vakam Atanosin Levitra, Kafakach, Amda Vikichu Kano Hain and Verminiknim Ba'amira. Okay. So, the following, we go back to the wedding. And at the wedding, so negotiations between his family, her family, and what we're going to do, we're going to write it all down into a document, and we'll have witnesses signing on the document, but you don't need a kinyan. In other words, the wedding itself creates enough of a context where obviously we're creating a hischaivus. We are going to be obligated. That is a statement made by Rav Gidal Marav. Amar Rav Mistabra Milsa Darav, Bibita Nara Dekamati Hana Liyadei, Aval Bogeres, Olamati Hana Liyadei Lo. So, Rav says, look, I hear the statement of Rav, but in the case where the father of the bride is the father of a Nara bride, not a Bogaris bride. What's the difference? Difference actually is very simple. When you're marrying off your daughter when she's a Nara, you get the money. You get the Kesef Kedushin. So I understand how it is that the agreement is going to be ratified because Hana, the father of the bride, is actually getting money. But if he's marrying off his daughter as a Bogaris, is the father of the bride getting any tangible money for marrying off his daughter? No. So what Rav is trying to suggest is a distinction to be made between when you're marrying off your Nara daughter versus marrying off your Bogaris daughter.
What about
Kitana? Same as Nara. Same as Nara. Ve'alokim amar Rav afilo Bogaris. But that's not true. Meaning Rav does not make a distinction. Obviously, what Rav is assuming is it's not the same. Yeah, because I'll ask you a really simple question. You're focusing on the father of the bride. How about the father of the groom? Right? The boy's father. I say boy, by the way. I understand he's about to get married. But in other words, but what about his father? Is he getting any tangible benefit? No. Doesn't matter if the bride was an Ara, Katana, Bogaris, meaning he's not getting tangible benefit. And yet, he is committing himself to whatever is being written. Ella. So in other words, they're going to be mechutanim with one another. That's exciting. Okay. So most of the time, yes, sometimes no, but it doesn't matter. In other words, there's the hana is that now you get status. You're going to be a mechutan. You're going to have kids that are going to be married. You have a status. And together with that status, that is enough of a hana'a that creates the binding commitment. Meaning that normally what happens is that a binding commitment is going to be ratified by a kinyan. By a wedding, we said no kinyan is necessary. We're trying to wrap our heads around why is no kinyan necessary. So what we proposed is that no kinyan is necessary because the father of the bride is actually getting money. But that's an incomplete explanation because father of the bride is getting money, but first of all, only when his daughter's a Nara or a Katana, not when she's a Bogaris. And number two is that the father of the groom is never getting money. So that's not it. So the Gemara concludes, you're right, that's not it. What it is, the hana that's creating the ratification, the commitment to all that which is written in, is the fact that our kids are getting married.
You have a star chov. The parents have nothing to do, even though they're committing.
Right.
They have nothing to do with the chiv because it's going to be on him. So how is that?
Yes and no. In other words, right. Correct. So first of all, The father of the bride is committing to Nadunya. In other words, that for sure is part and parcel of the commitment. Right. But in other words, but you're right though. In other words, the husband's commitments of Mizonos, et cetera, right? Ksuva, et cetera, you're right.
So where is that? How is it?
Right. So maybe the focus over here is on the Nadunya. Could be. All right. Okay. So. The question now is the following. So, now, are we able to write it down or are we not able to write it down? Amar lo nitnu likasev. So, no. So even though it was verbally committed, don't write it down. Eisver, the Gemara says, what are you talking about? A pikhim ayi kosvim. Amar nasha zonis bitzcha chameshanim kosman shati mi. So, my kosvim, omrim. Now, I know the Mishnah uses the language of kosvim, but kosvim over here just simply means omrim, meaning, right, with the Vikari Lela Amir Aksiva, the Gemara says, yeah, really, you could do that? The Gemara says, yeah, and yeah, actually, you can do that. Vatanan, this takes us back earlier in the Masechta, right? We did this a couple of Prakim ago. HaKosev Lishto, Dinu Dvarim, Ein Li B'Nechsech, V'Tani Rebbe Chia Omer Lishto. In other words, what happens when the husband wants to write a waiver to his wife, and that I'm not going to, right, the Nechasim, once we get married, even though the default position is that I become a de facto partner of all your assets, but let's say he removes himself from that. So does that work? The answer, of course, is it does work. And the Mishnah's language over there is a kosev liishto, and if I'm not mistaken, it was the really first piece of Gemara right after the Mishnah that said kosev over there means amira. Okay, tashma. Okay, so this agreement that's made to be written down as a shtar, tashma. So over here we have a brisa. The brisa says that when you write down this document, now I say this document, That's an ambiguous term. I'm going to keep it ambiguous right now. So you need dashneihem, you need the agreement of both. Hami dashneihem kosvin. So my love shtari psikta. So the Gemara is assuming right now all the agreements that they made at the chasna. So all that's going to be written down, right? Isn't that what we're describing? The Gemara says no, lo. Shtari erusin mamish. No, the Gemara says no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about a shtari erusin. So the Gemara says, really? So could Rav Papa Rav Shravya? In other words, yes, by shtari erusin. Now let's remind ourselves. Okay, we mentioned the first Mishnah in Kedushin. Let's mention it a second time this morning. It's not morning anymore. Sorry, I'm just creature. I'm a creature of habit. So the so let's mention it again. The first Mishnah in Kedushin. There are three ways to be Mekadosh a woman. One of them is shtar. Now we don't do this nowadays. Nowadays, Minag Yisrael is to do kesef, right? And we've been doing kesef for hundreds and hundreds of years. Okay, but you can marry a woman with a shtar. Now you're right. You marry a woman with a shtar. So how do you do it? It's actually really simple. You write on a document, Hare at Mekadeshes li b'shtar zeh, I'm marrying you with the shtar. And then you'll have witnesses signing on the shtar, and good, and then mazel tov, and the two of you are married. Good. So now, when you write up the shtar kedushin, so do you need her knowledge and acquiescence? Otherwise stated, maybe you could just pre-write it beforehand, meaning I have my eyes set on that girl, right? I'm really interested in that girl. She doesn't know it yet. Okay, and I understand that doesn't sound like it's going to be the most functional marriage, but she doesn't know it yet. But can I write up the shtar kedusha now, and then right when I get her to agree, so then can I give that shtar to her? That is a machlokus amongst the Amorayim. What the Gemara is telling us is that's what the Braisa means. The Braisa means that you can only write up the shtar kedusha, meaning it's not talking about the shtar psikta. It's talking about the shtar erusin. Can I write up the shtar erusin? And with or without her consent. The Bryce is telling us with and only with her consent. So the Itmar, you write it for her, but she doesn't know about it. So Rav and Ravina Amar Mekadeshes. So Rav and Ravina say the Kedushin is good. And Rav Papa Rav Shravi Armenim Mekadeshes. And they say it's no good. And yes, there is much to discuss in terms of what are the svaras behind each of the positions. But right now, for our purposes, all we're doing is saying this pshat in the Bryce, it sidesteps our question. Our question is, agreements were made at the chasna, and yes, they're binding. Do you write it down in a shtar, yes or no? Right now, inconclusive. Okay, so tashma. So we're going to do this one more time. Meso, b'nevseim nizonos menechas menechon, v'hi nizonos menechas meshubadim, memneshi kibal eschov. So we go back to our Mishnah. What did we say at our Mishnah? So in our Mishnah, we said that what you're going to do is that in the event that the stepfather dies, so he is now going to be bound contractually to support his stepdaughter. Well, he's no longer alive, but you understand. In other words, the estate is obligated now to support the stepdaughter as a contractual obligation. Nechasim mishubadim. So obviously what happened? Meaning, let's go back to the wedding. So what happened at the wedding is that they agreed, right? She said to him, are you in agreement that you're going to go ahead and support my daughter for 5 years? He said, yes. Now, obviously they wrote it down. If they didn't write it down, so then you can't collect from nechasim mishubadim. So you must have written it down, right? So the Gemara says, okay, I'll tell you what. Maybe you didn't write it down. So then, if that's true, so then why are you obligated contractually if you didn't write it down in a shtar? So the Gemara says, because you made a kinyan. So the Gemara says, well, and if that's true, so why don't you make a kinyan for your daughters? Now, I know the obvious question, which hopefully you're wondering right now, is what do you mean your own biological daughters? If you're marrying this woman, so they're not here yet. So, okay, because Shekhan Lezu, Velo Khan Lezu. So the Gemara says, you made a kinyan for your stepdaughter, but you did not make a kinyan for your actual daughters themselves. Oh, my Pascha, so Ihi, Davi Bashas Kinyan, Mahanale Kinyan, Benos Delo Havi Bashas Kinyan, La Mahanale Kinyan. So the Gemara makes the obvious point, which is that for your stepdaughter, she's here at the wedding. So obviously you can make a kinyan for her. Your own daughters, they're not here at the wedding, right? They hopefully, right? They, if your daughters are there at the wedding to you and your mother, so obviously over here there are some issues. So, okay, cool, good. Well, hold that thought. So Milo askin and Davi b'shas kinyan v'echidamik going to Gosha v'hadra. So the Gemara says, you know, it's possible that your daughters can be at your wedding with their mother. Now that's a trick question, right? Try this one at home. Right? How could it possibly be that your daughters are going to be there at the wedding with your mother? Now, the answer I would have given, which is not the right answer, is that you had the kids out of wedlock. Okay. So they no, the Gemara is going to not suggest such an answer. The Gemara says, look, it's very simple. What happened was is that you married their mother some time ago. You divorced her, and then she never married another man, and you wanted a second try. Okay, and Baruch Hashem, right? I've seen it happen, where right the kids are there at their parents' wedding. In other words, at a second attempt at marriage, why not? So the Gemara says, oh, so if that's true, so now what happens is the following. So at a second attempt at marriage, so now what you can do is you can now make a kinyan. In other words, you can make a kinyan for your stepdaughters. You can also make a kinyan for your daughter as well. So what we need now is a chiluk, right? Some distinction to understand, because our Mishnah said that for your stepdaughters, you're contractually obligated. And for your daughters, you're not contractually obligated. You're obligated, but not contractually. And we think right now that the whole difference is kinyan versus no kinyan. The Gemara is like, it's not true. We can come up with cases, admittedly, they're not normal cases, but we can come up with cases where they're kinyanim for both your stepdaughter and your daughter. Ela ihi delesa b'tanai beisdin, mahani le kinyan. Benos de isnu b'tanai beisdin, la mahani le kinyan. So the Gemara says, okay, so the difference is as follows. Meaning your own daughters are already incorporated in what's called tanai ksuva. The Tanai Ksuva already requires you to support your daughters. Your stepdaughter, on the other hand, you have no contractual obligation to do so. And because you have no contractual obligation to do so, so it's only because now of an outside commitment that you're making that now that you have to pay them. So the Gemara says, Migre Grii? Okay. But now, as much as I understand the difference, I don't understand the difference. Okay, so your own daughters, contractually obligated, incorporating the Ksuva. Your stepdaughter is an outside contract. Okay, but does that mean that your own daughters should now have lesser ability to collect? So Ella, but no, so the Gemara says, you're right. From that standpoint alone, that's not enough to explain the difference, but here's the difference. Your own daughters, okay? Obviously, because they're your own daughters, and because you are ksuva contracted to go ahead and support them, so now the concern and the consideration is the following. In other words, let's say, Rachmanis, you know you're dying. And so now, basically, you say to your daughters, look, here's the situation. I have to support you, and my state's going to support you as well. Do me a favor. Go to the back room over there, you know, where I had the money. Take a little bit for yourselves. In other words, and under those circumstances, the daughters now have taken money for themselves, and there's always going to be concern that they took money, right? That's the tsrari atfesino. Now, mind you, by the way, in other words, that concern is not going to be enough to mitigate, and the estate can't later on say, I don't know, maybe girls took money before dad died. In other words, to that degree, that will not be a valid argument on the part of the estate. The estate is still going to be obligated to support them. But for them now to go to a lokeach, a buyer of the property, and now exercise a lien against the buyer of the property, when you have that in the back of your mind wondering now, maybe they took money before dad died. So to that degree, they won't be able to go ahead and collect from a lokeach. On the other hand, a stepdaughter, so it's just the way the relationships work. The stepdaughter, no, dad was not giving her any money before he died. And so now you know that she has a contractual obligation, and you know that there was not any consideration to her before dad died. So this contractual obligation is going to be treated like a standard contractual obligation, where now she, the stepdaughter, can go to Lokech and say, look, in other words, you took the property. I have a note outstanding. My note has a lien with it. Thank you very much. I'm going to take back the property. And she has the right to do so.
Only because you're afraid she's going to take money.
I'm also surprised by the conclusion of the Gemara. But the Gemara says it as clearly as possible, meaning it's simple pshat in the Gemara. Yeah. And if I may, I would suggest, just as a way of considering it, meaning we're always interested in protecting buyers. Meaning the Chachamim want to make sure that, in other words, you have to balance. In other words, she has a Chiv Mizonis, but we also need consumer confidence. In other words, is there maybe right? I totally hear you. In other words, the Gemara is simply saying that because of that, and because of buyer protection, and we the Chachamim are interested in making sure that when people buy properties, in other words, certain things that they can discover through due diligence, and certain things they can't discover through due diligence. This is one of those things that are, you know, I'll put in the category of undiscoverable. And so therefore, the Chachamim went ahead and protect buyers. Okay. We're going to stop over here. Tomorrow, we're going to pick it up at the two dots. Really exciting dots coming up tomorrow. I say tomorrow, by the way, I mean Shemini Atzeres. Okay. Tomorrow is one of those rare days we're off. But let's quickly recap our daf today. We started here the 12th parak of the Masech, the second to last parak of Masech Tuksuvos, in which a man marries a woman and now not only gets a wife, but gets a stepdaughter as well. She was previously married, and now his contractual obligations to support her for 5 years. Again, 5 years is just a number. In other words, and once he does so now he's contractually bound to do so. And what if she marries again and the second husband also makes such an agreement? So fine. So now she's going to get two streams of revenue. And what if she marries? So now she's going to get a third stream of revenue. Good, more power to her. Now, what these husbands can do is that they can protect themselves by just simply writing a clause into the contract. Yeah, I'll support your daughter as long as we're married. Once we're no longer married, I no longer have to support you. That's the Mishnah. And then for the balance of the daf today, what we did is we litigated the following. Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, what happens in the circumstance in which no note, no document, no signed document, an admission of I owe you money. And with that admission, I also write like a little handwritten note. I owe you money. And you hand them the note. And you do so in front of witnesses. And does that now have any legal significance? Rav Yochanan says yes. Reish Lakish says no. And for most of today's daf, what we did is we litigated that very question of whether that is the paperwork that you're now writing up going to have any legal significance, yes or no? That was most of today's daf. And then we finished up with Adachasna. So there's going to be agreements that are made between Chasan and Chasan Kala and Chasan's family and Kala's family. And these agreements now are going to be binding agreements. And then you don't have to make a Kenyan. That was the Chiddush of Gidol Merav. And the Gemara says, and it's not because the father's going to get money. In other words, it's simply the pshat that there's a certain hana that one receives when marrying off kids. And so therefore, the agreement is going to be binding. And then the last thing that we discussed today is that binding agreement. Nasan li kasev, or ain't no nasan li kasev. Should we be writing it down? Should we be writing it down as a formal document? Yes or no? And the Gemara equivocates on that very issue. Okay, Adkan. Okay.